Hello and welcome to Pints with Treebeard. I'm Jameson Winter. I'm the Dean of the Upper School at Augustine School here in Jackson, Tennessee, and I'm joined by Joshua Edgren.
Hello, I'm Josh Edgren. I'm a pastor and teacher in Moscow, Idaho. Jameson, what's the word of the day? What are we talking about?
So last week we took an episode just to briefly, very briefly, talk about what marriage is and big picture. What is this relationship? What is this covenant that God has given us with our wives? How does it work? What are some of the big ideas maybe to understand about our place as husbands and as fathers, but especially as husbands? Because we focused, as you mentioned last week, a lot on raising children and haven't spent much time on the first thing that comes, which is being a husband. And so we wanted to take just a few episodes to do that. We've got the big picture out of the way, and we'll come back to that, I'm sure, many times throughout these conversations, but also in the future. We also wanted to focus on some specifics, though, some things that we think are helpful and that have been helpful for us to learn from others, things that we've talked about together at times, perhaps. And so this week, we wanted to take a full episode to talk about the idea of dating your wife. You obviously go on dates before you get married, but that's something that should continue in some respect after you get married. Obviously, that changes then once you have children, and it changes depending on the age of the children at home. So we wanted to think through that and discuss it today. And I'm just curious initially to throw this question back to you, Josh. What have you seen are the major differences in dating before marriage and dating after marriage? And we can maybe talk about when kids come into the picture later, because that changes things. But have you seen any significant shifts either in principle or just in practice?
Oh, golly. You're asking me to remember a long time ago now. And there's been a couple things that have happened. You know, it'll be 10 years in December. Like we're pushing, yeah, pushing the big 1-0. Differences between dating before marriage and dating after marriage. In one sense, the dating before marriage is like planning for the trip, and the dating after marriage is like going on the trip. So before marriage, you're exploring, you're discovering, you are testing. You don't know what you're doing whatsoever. It's like packing for a camping trip when you've never gone camping before and you've only ever watched other people go camping. And you're like, I don't know, should we bring food? Right? A tent? Sound like a good idea? And then so you're kind of exploring, planning, talking about the things you're going to do. Whereas dating when you're married is like talking about the things you are currently doing. It's more like, I don't know if the camping metaphor will continue, but it's like taking stock of where your camping trip is right now. Golly, we should have brought a tent. Like that would have been a good idea. Something like that. So it is a different thing, because you are in a fundamentally different position. And the odd thing about dating, but even more about engagement, which I've talked about before, is this weird difference between your perception of reality and reality. When you're dating before marriage, you're feeling like you're getting more and more married, but you're not. Right? You're actually still unmarried, but you feel like you're getting more and more married. It's like you're loading the car, you're checking things off the list, and you're getting ready for the camping trip, but you're not camping yet.
And in fact, the camping trip is in another month and a half.
Yeah, right.
And the car is packed in the driveway, ready to go.
Yeah, you're like, come on. Right. And so, but then after you're married, you're in this fundamentally different place. You're positionally different. And so it's a totally different thing in some respects, and yet you still do the same things. You like go out to dinner and talk. So what about you? What do you think about that?
I think that's a great metaphor. I love the camping metaphor, because you're right. It's like planning a trip and then going on the trip. And like, okay, if you don't like camping, if you've never been camping, that could be a trip to another country, right? You're figuring out which country am I going to go to? What am I going to do when I'm there, right? Do I go to Italy? Do I go to Greece? Do I go to see historical sites? Do I go to see some of the modern cities? What am I going to do? on this trip. And then when you're there, it's a totally different experience, which is absolutely right. You're figuring things out in dating, and your dates are a means to figure out who this person is and whether we should continue into marriage or not. And a successful date is not the same when you're married versus when you're dating, because a successful date could be, or a series of dates maybe more likely, things continue to progress and you realize this isn't working out. We should go our separate ways. And you arrive at that decision and realize, great, that's okay. This is successful. If we've treated one another well, if we've walked as a brother and sister in Christ, then we can leave this relationship, this dating thing behind us and just move on as brother and sister in the Lord. But in marriage, you already know that stuff that you were trying to figure out in dating, and you're actually getting to do it. You're getting to live the rest of your life with this person. And I think it's important. One of the reasons we did this episode is because it's important to make sure that we as husbands in particular don't lose sight of that fact, that just because we're actually doing the whole marriage thing now doesn't mean that dates are somehow irrelevant and that they don't matter, and that designated time with your wife doing something together, whatever that looks like, and we'll get into some specifics and very practical kind of approaches to these things in a little bit, but whatever that looks like, you don't just leave that part of your relationship behind, because that's actually what you've been building to. That's like the whole point of it was, I get to do this now for the rest of my life with this person.
Jameson, can we define some terms, or specifically one term? Could you define date? Could you define it as a noun and as a verb?
I mean, something that you're doing with your wife in a particular way to get to know her and to do something with her, and that is vice versa for her, right? So this is not the same thing, and something maybe, again, there's kind of a gray area here, that's not just what you would normally do on any given day of the week, right? So eating breakfast together, if you do that every morning, that doesn't count, right? If you have to go to work early and you'd never get to eat breakfast together, but you're off of work for one day and you go out on a breakfast date, okay, that's different. That's a unique thing. And it doesn't have to be something that you've never done before, right? It could be a weekly thing. It could be a monthly thing, whatever. But it's not something that's part of the everyday. The two of you are doing it in a particular way together. When we talk about kids coming into the equation, we can talk about ways to do that with kids sometimes, because I do think that it's fine to call something a date, even if your young kids are there. But it's still different, right? Even that dynamic is maybe the outlier and not the norm, just by nature. And so that's maybe the noun side of things. The verb side of things is a little more nebulous in my mind. So I'm just going to throw that back to you. You go for it.
Well, it's interesting that you define part of your definition of, you know, to go on a date. Is the idea is knowledge. The goal is knowledge. You're trying to get to know your wife better. And that's interesting. And that's certainly the purpose before you're married. You're trying to get to know, as you said, whether or not this marriage ought to work out, ought to happen, I should say. but then it's interesting. Is the point still knowledge after you're married? And I actually would say yes, I would. And I think I draw off of 1 Peter 3, verse 7, which talks about instructions of 1 Peter 3 is talking about instructions to husband and wives, and the wives get 6 verses and the husbands get 1. Do with that what you will. But verse 7 says, likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, right? Dwell with them with understanding. And so there is this particular calling to husbands to be continuing to know their wives. And so you're not, after you're married, you're not finding out things like what's your favorite movie or where do you like to get ice cream, but you are still getting to know her. You are still living with her according to knowledge. And that new information you get may be, how was your day, right?
And in that line of thinking, the knowledge isn't merely factual. It's not like you go on a date with your wife and you're just trying to check off, okay, what are some new facts that I can learn about you? Maybe that happens. Sometimes I hear a story from Megan that I haven't heard before, and it's fun because I think, oh, that was what Megan did or said at 9 years old. I had no idea. I'd never right. put that in fun. The category yep. of my wife as a person, that she would do something like that or say something like that. And sometimes you get those stories from parents, like her parents, or she'll do the same with my parents. And that's also a lot of fun. But it's not merely that. That's, in fact, that's like the very shallow surface level of getting to know your wife. It's a relational knowing, right? This is actually what the Lord uses to refer to sexual union so often, which is that the husband and wife know one another. They knew one another and conceived a child, right? So knowing in a relational sense, in a spiritual sense, is, I think, really just that, living out the fact of your marriage together. And that's really what we mean holistically when we think about getting to know. We don't mean learning favorite colors or things like that, even if some of that information comes. Like, I didn't know that you were so good at mini golf because we had never gone before. And it turns out you get hole in one all the time.
Turns out you're really, really, really good.
Yeah. So there are things like that that you might pick up, but it's more important than that. It's deeper than that. It's connecting with them as a person in the one flesh union and understanding who she is and what she is like. And as you said, what she's feeling today, right? What is relevant on your mind and on your heart right now? Because that's different than 5 years ago. That's different than last week a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And I need to know that. I need to understand that. And so I need to be asking questions and talking and discussing these sorts of things. Because if you're not, then you're going to slowly drift into something that I kind of alluded to last week, which is that you spend your days apart when you're working, and then you come back home and she's been there with the kids all day, and you sit down and you have dinner and you put them in bed, and maybe you get an hour or two after that to the just the two of you yourselves. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh, well, I haven't been out of town. We've been together this whole time, when really you haven't, actually. Mm-hmm. You've been separated for much of the day. And then even when you were back, it was you and her and the kids, which just breeds this opportunity. It's not necessary, but it breeds the opportunity for you to pass through weeks and months at a time and then realize, wait a minute, tons of things have happened to you and to me, and we've both changed in significant ways that we haven't communicated about. And that could be for good or for ill. The changes, but if we haven't been knowing one another, and if you as the husband have not been pursuing your wife, then the responsibility for that ignorance falls back on you, not just for your own ignorance, but if she doesn't know what you're thinking, right? If I'm starting to contemplate big ideas about our family and calling and things like that, and I haven't spoken to her about it and processed that with her and thought through it with her, not just to make a decision, but just, hey, this is what's on my mind. These are the things that I'm thinking about. Well, then I can't blame her for not knowing that. It's my responsibility as the husband to pursue her in that way.
And so thank you. I tricked you into giving a definition of date as a verb. I would say pursue is right. And I think the other verb you used earlier is celebrate. And I think those two together define date as a verb. You're pursuing and you're celebrating. You're desiring to live with her according to knowledge, as the scriptures say, and that means that you have to be in fellowship, right? That means you have to be in proximity, and not just proximity of body, but proximity of mind and soul. And so there are certain circumstances wherein that can't occur profitably, like over screaming toddlers, right? Or just in the normal hubbub of daily life. And so in order to pursue your wife, in order to be in fellowship with her and, you know, mind and soul, you've got to separate from the daily life. And so I liked what you said, that it's got to be special. It's got to be different. If you just go out and take a walk to check the mail, that's not a date. Right. If you go out and you take a walk down to the nearby county park and you peruse the grove of trees and sit on the hillside and watch the birds fly. Well, OK, but then maybe that is a date. Right. If you eat breakfast every day anyways. Right. That's not a date. But if you take her out to breakfast, or you send the kids with somebody else and you make her a special breakfast date. Right. So it's the pursuit. It's the, and almost, I don't know, almost a holiness thing. It's almost like you're taking this thing and sanctifying it, not like in making it like God, but you're cutting it away from the rest of life and saying it is set apart.
That's right. I'm glad you used the word set apart. You're consecrating it unto your marriage relationship, right? You're consecrating this time unto the betterment and pursuit of this woman whom you love, right? And you're seeking to use that time, like you said, not holiness, okay, in one sense, like all of the Christian life should be consecrated to God. But what is holiness means? It means to be set apart for a distinct purpose, and particularly in holiness for the purpose of glorifying God. So this is setting something apart for the purpose of bettering, strengthening the marriage covenant and bond between the two of you. And that can be in big things like a weekend trip where you really just have isolated time together to talk and to dream and to think big thoughts. And that can be something small like a 30-minute walk in the park, right? There can be different modes. And so maybe we can transition to what are some of the things that we've picked up? What are some of the things that we enjoy doing with our wives, to just give practical examples, because the title of this episode indicates that there are a lot of different things that you could do for dates. But I think we've kind of covered the principles of what it is that we're doing. Maybe let's start with, what are some important components in your mind to what makes a good date? Like, abstract from the thing itself, whatever you're doing, what are some things that are essential? You already mentioned one, which is particularly secluding yourself if you have kids from the kids, because if kids are talking to you, interrupting, screaming back and forth, playing, laughing, whatever, those things are all well and good in their time. But if this pursuit is going to be happening, then I need at least distance from that, even if it's not total isolation from it. So that's one. What are others that come to mind that like make a good date?
Yeah, well, I'm just chewing on, you know, why is it necessary to get away from the kids? Well, because if you're still with the kids, then you're still working, right? And you're still doing the work of taking care of the kids. And so it's not a single focus on the other. It'd be sort of like if I said, you know, sweetie, let's go out. I have an idea. Let's go to an elders meeting, right?
Yeah.
And then we went, well, that's could be fun. But probably not. But it could be fun, but it's not a date, right? Because it's not a single focus. So general things. The date has to be costly. I think that's key. It doesn't have to be costly in money necessarily, because you might not have any. But it has to be costly in some respect. So time, attention, money, perhaps. It has to be to express the value that you place upon the covenantal relationship you have with your wife. So one aspect is that it needs to be costly. Another is that the purpose of it is fellowship with your wife, and deeper fellowship, the sort of fellowship you can't have when you're just in the normal hurly burly. It's got to be fellowship of mind and soul with your wife. So that means that it ought not to be a dual purpose sort of thing. The goal is not to run some errands and hang out. That's fine. You can do that. But I think the date proper has the focus on the other, the husband to the wife to the husband. Now, you can do an activity together, and that can be a date, but the activity ought to be the sort of thing that fosters fellowship of mind and mind and heart. There's some thoughts. I've got more, but you take a turn.
So you're saying that going to the grocery store with your wife doesn't foster those kinds of things for you guys?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Just wanted to make sure we're on the same page. No,
yeah.
I agree.
We're dragging.
Yeah. I mean, the thing, maybe the one thing I would add here before we get into specifics is, along those lines, look for things that you enjoy doing together. And that takes some maybe push and pull or give and take maybe from both sides. Like, you are going to need to be learning things that your wife enjoys and learn to appreciate them because she enjoys them. And not just to appreciate her while you're doing the thing, although that's the starting point, but as much as possible, try to actually learn to appreciate the thing because she enjoys it. She loves it. And so try to learn to love it and enjoy it as she does. Because if you don't, I think you're just, you might continue to do it, but you're setting yourself up for a subpar experience at best, which is I'm doing this thing. I don't really like it, but my wife likes doing it. So I'm going to go and I won't complain about it, but I'm going to be tempted to complain about it. Like that's the best case scenario. Whereas if you can actually learn to love whatever it is, then great. You're doing this thing that you both enjoy. And the vice versa is also true. Like she should be, you should be exposing her to some of the things that you enjoy and bringing her into them, inviting her into that world. So this is not a date per se, but one of the things that I kind of invited Megan into in our marriage was watching the NFL. And I don't watch it religiously or anything, but she didn't watch it really at all. And she didn't know anything about it. And she didn't know that much about football, really. And so she'd watched like some Alabama games with her grandfather and things like that growing up. But it wasn't something that she did. And as I wanted to watch the Packers games, I would ask her to do that with me. And then I would talk about what's going on with her. And I would kind of expose her to the deeper things that she didn't necessarily know. Like, okay, these are who the players are. This person was drafted in the first round. So it's a big deal that he's dropped three passes this game or whatever, you know, and help her to understand the world. So look for opportunities when you're on actual dates to do that with one another. If you're doing something that one person is used to that the other person is not maybe as invested in. You know, so let's get into some specifics on that note. One of the things that's maybe something we actually learned together, this isn't something that I brought her into, but one of the things that we did during COVID in particular to just get outside and be together was we both picked up disc golf at the same time. And we both played Frisbee in college, so we had a kind of common ground there. And it's not the same thing at all, but it is at least adjacent in some ways. So yeah, we would just go out to Union or go to some course nearby, and it's a great time to walk and to get to talk together, but then also to learn a new skill together, which is really valuable and something that just like bringing someone into something that you're good at is a fun and enjoyable experience. It's enriching, and that's in marriage or just like if I'm teaching somebody how to do something with woodworking or they're teaching me how to do something with a car or whatever. That's a good experience for your relationship with that person, but it's a whole different thing to learn something new together at the same time, and it's also good to do that. So it's something that we enjoyed. It's a good example of just getting outside, having some downtime. It's very leisurely. You just walk at your own pace and you're learning something. You're pushing yourselves to get better and to practice the skill and to even kind of coach each other and say, okay, can you watch me? Watch how I throw this. Because I feel like I'm doing this well, but it keeps going 90 yards in the wrong direction. And you tell me what I'm doing wrong. And to actually, you know, practice the skill of it together, but then to be having conversations about the kids or whatever's going on at work or, you know, bigger picture stuff while you're walking around the field. It's a lot of fun. So that's one example to kind of put some flesh on it. What's maybe one that you found particularly enjoyable for you and Kelsey to come back to?
Yeah, no, it's interesting reflecting. And I will say at the outset that in the particular, this is an area where, let's just say, you picked this topic, and I'm very glad you did, but I would say this is an area where I definitely could stand to grow, and particularly where I could stand to grow is in intentionality, creativity, imagination, that sort of thing. So for us, it has, we've tried various different things, and for instance, we've done very little of the learning of new skills together. I like to do my things and she likes to do her things. And we often do them in close proximity to one another, right? So I've taken up spoon carving and she knits. And we sit by the fire and I carve my spoons and she knits and we talk. But that's not exactly the same thing. I'm focused on my craft and she's focused on her craft, and we're talking sort of between it. So I'm not even sure I'd call that a date. I absolutely wouldn't, actually, because it doesn't satisfy the it's not costly. It's me doing what I enjoy doing and her doing what she enjoys doing. We just happen to be near each other. I would totally agree that the thing has to be mutually enjoyable. That's at the essence of it, which is why food so often features, right? Because you always can find food that you both enjoy. And that's not a cop-out, and that's not a lesser thing. That truly is a huge part of life, right? We eat three times a day. God has given us bountiful, lavish gifts of almost infinite complexity, and so too, to enjoy good food with one another is a glorious thing. And to give, you know, for me to take my wife out and say, you don't cook today. Instead, we go and we have someone else cook for you. And you can now just enjoy it. And we can talk about the food that we're having and delight in this good thing together and share, you know, you got this, I got that. Let's share. It's this thing that we're enjoying together that we can remember and talk about even. So I know that's basic and straightforward, but it's no less potent for being obvious.
And I would actually say it's a foundational element of dating as a practice to go out to meals together, because and go out to meals, you could, again, you could have the kids go somewhere else and you just cook at home regardless of circumstance and financial ability or whatever. Also, you don't have to go out to a nice dinner per se. You don't have to spend $50 a plate. You can go to Taco Bell and order off the dollar menu, and that's fine. And the point of it is not the food is so amazing. That's something that you might get to experience sometimes, but again, especially as a young couple, you're not going to most likely be able to do whenever you want. But the point of it is, what do you do when you're at a table? You enjoy fellowship.
Yeah.
That's if you think about what has our Lord done to bring us into fellowship with himself every Sunday, he gives us the table. We come and share a meal with him. We actually, we get to practice this weekly because we recognize as humans that there's something here that God has tied into our minds and bodies innately, which is that this thing that I need in food goes with somehow these people that I need relationally.
Yeah.
And sharing those things together, forcing them together, is important to us. And we can maybe talk about that a whole other time, but I just want to highlight that it is actually important. It's not just like the basic, like you said, it's not a cop-out, and it's not the basic kind of mundane thing. This is one of the preeminent examples.
Yeah.
And that's why people do it. It's not like everybody's boring in the world, and so we just happen to go out on dates to nice dinners, and sometimes somebody gets a brilliant idea like bowling. No, we we spend time going out to eat so regularly and cross-culturally because we recognize the value of sharing table fellowship with another person. And that's the other unique thing about a dinner, is that you're sitting down eye to eye, totally connected with each other. There, in other words, the food is not a distraction most of the time. I mean, if it's really nice food, maybe. Like if you go to Texas Day Brazil or something, you're going to keep coming back to, oh man, these, you know, this pork loin is so amazing, or this cut of ribs is so fantastic. You're going to keep bringing up the food and talking about the food. Okay, great. But most of the time, you're not talking about the food. Most of the time, you're talking about each other and with each other and about other things. So yeah, it's just a great example and something not to sleep on. And if you don't have ideas, like, okay, go do that. Go out to eat. There's an idea. That's an easy one. Again, it doesn't have to be a nice thing.
And go out. You can always go out somewhere you haven't been before.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
try something new, even if it's, like, again, not a nice place, but just try something new.
Yeah, yeah. And there's little bits of adventure that you can have there. I was just thinking about this. Another reason why it's important, or why we so often go out for meals when we're dating before marriage, is this is a thing that every single person in the world does, like eats. And so you're doing, like, how does he eat? How does she eat? Is this thing that I need to know, right? And you can learn a lot about someone by the way they eat and by the way they conduct themselves at the table, What are their table manners like? Do they have any, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So again, that's just underlining, maybe double underlining, going out to eat is a good date and you should do it. One thing, maybe just as a principle, kind of going back to that for just a second, because I thought about it, that one thing I would say in that line is to just make sure going into dates that you don't take things too seriously. We've learned this the hard way. So I imagine we're not alone in this, but literally every time we tried to go on a nice quote unquote date while we were dating. And then for the first maybe two or three, maybe just one or two in marriage, we had like a nice evening that we had planned together and we were looking forward to it. And great, we're going to do this thing. Every time it was like this deep spiritual attack on us where something would happen and inevitably we would end up just at odds, cross purposes, totally miserable, misunderstanding. And we worked it out every time and we learned how to work it out every time because we were not content to just leave angry with each other. But that takes a long time and it ruins the evening in one sense. On the other hand, when you finish working it out, you just kind of laugh it off and you're like, that was ridiculous. Like, how do we spend so much time ruining this evening that we've had together based on this silly little thing that was said or done? And that goes, you know, that goes both ways and you figure those things out. But that's one of the things that we had to learn is, man, when we want to go and have a nice evening to kind of facilitate building up our relationship, anticipate spiritual attacks, anticipate Satan trying to get in the way and stop you from being good at what you're doing because it's a good thing. And so that's kind of a precursor to say, okay, the fruit of that is now for the last 2 years on our anniversary, we've gone out to dinner and both times we've broken down in the van and both times we've just kind of rolled with it and said, okay, like first time was funny and we laughed it off and the person babysitting had to come and pick us up and they brought us home and then they just left and we put the boys down and had pizza or whatever we were going to eat at home. And then the second time it happened, we were actually getting somebody to watch the kids and spend the night at their house. And then we picked them up after breakfast the next morning. But it happened again as we were going to dinner. So we actually had to get them to come pick us up. And they actually gave us their car for the night, which was great because we could go back home. And so, yeah, we were able to enjoy a dinner and then make a breakfast that was like nice and casual and slow and have coffee in the morning and talk for like 3 hours in the morning as the sun was rising, which was just perfect. But we actually, when we broke down in the parking lot, I think Megan is the one who suggested that we take a picture with the hood up. So we took a picture with the hood up, like, okay, this is a tradition now. So we're just asking ourselves, she mentioned the other day, we should think about our anniversary and where we're going to break down this year, which I appreciated. So, you know, taking yourself too seriously can get in the way of a date. And that's just maybe a word of wisdom from people who have had to live the experience of really, having a miserable time sometimes because you're under the attack of the enemy when you're seeking to do good things and maybe in a particular way here.
No, definitely. Adding on to that, there have been many miserable dates and often like this makes no sense. Why now are we having this particular conflict? And then sometimes it's very obvious, like, oh yeah, I just sinned against her. Rats. Like, that wasn't good. Okay, now I need to make that right. And there is a dynamic of this is a thing that we are going to do to get away from the rest of life. We are going to enjoy ourselves. And if we're not careful, especially as husbands, that can turn really self-centered and selfish really fast. And it can stop being, this is me pursuing my wife, blessing her, celebrating her. And it can turn to, this is a time for me to go out and do something I enjoy with my wife being very nearby. And that selfishness or that I am now free of the responsibilities of life. I can kind of let my guard down, let my hair down, so to speak. I don't have any hair to let down, but you know what I mean? I can relax. That move is often a time when you then also neglect you know, the lovely lady that you theoretically intended to bless by this thing. So that's another word of warning. And maybe just generally, if you're listening and you've had a bunch of miserable dates, you're not alone. You're not alone. Persevere.
Yeah, you're not the first person that I've heard agree with me that this happens regularly and that it gets better. It oftentimes, yeah. I assume that this has been y'all's experience. You get better at managing expectations and also enjoying one another on the date. It's a practice, yep. Just like everything in dating and everything in marriage is a practice to get better at. You get better at going on, yep, dates together and knowing, okay, we can kind of preempt the attacks of the enemy and the ways that he's going to try to sow discord here and laugh it off. Like, who cares that we broke down or whatever? Mm-hmm. This could be a time to be stressful or anxious or you know, whatever, to blame each other or something like that. And you just get better at dealing with that and seeing through it for what it is.
Yeah.
And you get better at seeing through your own kind of selfish desires. But that often takes stepping in those selfish desires and realizing, oh, that's what that was. Okay, don't do that next time. Got it. And you learn over time.
Yep. Like, oh, that's a rake. Don't step on,
right,
it. Wappa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's a question. What are your thoughts on the whole movie date dynamic? Like going out to see a movie together. Do you guys do that? Has that been something you've enjoyed? Do you guys, you try it and say, we don't really do that anymore?
No, that's actually a big one. We totally do that. And we really enjoy it. And that's something that we did a lot before we had kids and when the kids were small, and we never do now because it's, because they stopped making good movies in 2019. But also because that's just it's a lot of time to be away from the kids and, paying a sitter's a lot. And anyways, so we totally did though. And I actually am a big advocate for that one, because you're enjoying a story together, and you're experiencing, you're experiencing a work of art together. Then it's fodder for conversation and it's part of your then shared experience. I'm a big fan of going out to movies for dates, but also just watching movies, carefully selected. There was a while there, I think it was also COVID, when we weren't going out much, but we sort of said, let's pick a lineup of, 10 movies or so that we really want to see, and let's think about them carefully and get recommendations from friends and, rent them and put ourselves through a series of one a week and let's watch high quality films. And you know what? It was awesome. Really enjoy it.
That's great. And I think one thing that you mentioned is important that I'm not great at, and we don't do as much as we should, I'm sure, but discussing them afterwards is big. Like the story is good for what it is, and experiencing that together is its own kind of thing that's helpful and good and gives you some common language to come back to someday, even if you don't immediately. But I think digesting it together and thinking about it together is a great idea, which makes me want to flip the classic date of going to dinner and then going out to see a movie, where if you go see the movie first and then you can bear to wait and eat after, you can actually discuss the movie, which is great. I just encourage people to try that. Or if you're doing it at home, then just stay up and talk about it for a little while. Don't start it like we do sometimes at 9 and then fall asleep by 9:30 or 9:45 and then you don't see it. And
we're so old, we watch movies in like 3 or 4 parts. That's right.
Well, I remember not specifically the first time we did that, but I remember doing that the first couple of times and thinking, huh, we're at this stage in our lives, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Because we got to get to bed because these kids are going to wake up at the same time no matter what. And we got to be ready. I mean, I guess you don't have to be ready. You have a lot to do after the fact if you're not ready. And then you wake up to chaos.
The consequences are worse. Yeah. No. So experiencing stories together, I think, is our main, our go-to when it comes to dates. So we'll read together. We'll watch movies together. Those are kind of what we love most. Yeah. So I'll read to Kelsey, and we'll work through a book, over time. And then it's part of our common vocabulary. We're talking about it. We're thinking about it. It's shaping kind of how we're experiencing the world. And it's something that we enjoy together. Usually those books, I guess often those are books that I've read before and that I'm sharing with her. But it's, it's uniquely enjoyable when it's a book neither of us have read, and we're experiencing it together, page by page. And that's one of the joys of watching movies together, is it's usually ones that neither of us have seen. So we're getting to experience it sort of like what you were saying. We're learning the thing for the first time together.
Yeah. When you guys read, do you typically just do that kind of at home one night? You set aside a time to do that? Or are you thinking like we go out and do this over dinner or something? What does that look like, I guess, for you in terms of date?
Yeah, in all fairness, calling that a date may be stretching it a little bit. I'd say sometimes when we do it, it counts, and sometimes it doesn't. Because often that is just sort of, we've got some time in the evenings, let's read. But I've been mulling over, actually, we really do enjoy this thing, and we've struggled to find the time to do it. So maybe I need to be more intentional about when we do it. And maybe, going out and doing it, in a quasi-public place, actually, maybe would be a good idea. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm chewing on.
That's good. So I was wanting to pick up on that idea, which is just that this is something you plan for. And you can make a mundane or simple or everyday kind of thing into a date by planning it and planning it as a date and saying, hey, let's do this and let's do it as a date and not do it in a way that's going to be interrupted or that's just like, what do you want to do tonight, this evening? Let's plan it intentionally as a date and connect over whatever it is that we're doing. We do that sometimes with games. So it's been fun to see Megan coming into marriage, having exposure to kind of basic board games like Splendor or Dominion or whatever, mostly from Steve Svebakken and Hannah Svebakken, and like growing up playing games with their kids, which is great. But it's been fun to see her ready to kind of dive into some of the longer form games that I'm interested in. And it's funny because I ordered several of these games thinking, it'll be so great when we get four or five people to play this game and I'll teach my friends how to play it. And several of these are like me as a single man actually trying to get guys together to play these games. And a lot of it just never happened. But now we'll play something like Eclipse just one-on-one, and it actually makes a great two-player game.
You play Eclipse with your wife?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That's one of the ones that she enjoys more than the others in terms of longer games. She's like,
that's hilarious.
I don't know if I would play like these three games, but I would play Eclipse right now. We could do that.
I just want you to know, I think you married a rather atypical woman, just as we all did, we all did. But yes.
No, yeah. So I wouldn't say to anyone on the front end, hey, yeah, just go teach your wife to play Eclipse. But it's been fun. That's the kind of thing that I'm getting at, that Megan actually helped to teach me in marriage, is it is enjoyable for her to learn about and experience and learn to love things that I love, things that I enjoy. Okay, so I see you, before we were married, I see you taking time to play Twilight Imperium for a day with your close friends, or I see you talking about this game with friends that you guys played and how it went and kind of the strategy and what happened and how crazy it was that you rolled that seven times in a row. I can't believe it. How could you? And the game hinged on that turn. So she learned to appreciate those things just through talking about them, and then wanted to try it out. Again, we're kind of unique in that we got married during COVID. So it's like, or right before COVID. So it's like, okay, suddenly we're just at home all day and nobody's, if somebody comes over to see us, then maybe the world will end. I don't know. That was what everybody was saying at the time. And
it was a weird time.
Yeah.
You had to be there. Yeah.
And it's strange that many people won't have been there, at least not nearly in the same way. Right. So we actually did have, I just didn't get to come into work for weeks, and I had very little to do at home for my work responsibilities, and the same for her. So we were getting paid and had a lot of time at home, and like generally people weren't around. So we kind of built that practice early on in marriage of playing games through that unique circumstance, which is great. But we actually, so we'll do that sometimes, less now with, as you get more kids, it becomes harder and you have less time and more little grabby hands. But we'll actually do that not as a date per se, but as a more of a family thing where we'll sit down to a game during nap time, start it, and then keep it going when they wake up from naps. And then they want to come and see how things are going, that's fun. But we enjoy getting outside a lot. So we'll go on walks. Walks are big. It's kind of like eating although you don't need to do it, you know, just go on a walk through the park or something. But that's also something that you can do with kids that I was alluding to earlier. It gets harder to manage dates when you're not just a husband and wife in a home together, but you've got these little people who you have to take care of and who you don't want to leave with the sitter for their sake, like for the sitter's sake for, you know, 5 hours or whatever. And then if, you know, if a baby's waking up and inconsolable and that kind of thing, you've got to be ready to be interrupted. But if you take the kids to the park and they're at the age where they can just play and you can sit on a bench together for 30 minutes uninterrupted, like that's great. We'll watch the kids playing and they have a blast and they go down slides and climb on everything. And we have great conversations sometimes just doing that. And then sometimes we'll walk around, like around the playground where we can keep an eye on them, or they'll walk with us for a time. And so we're doing something with the family, but then transition into a time of just me and Megan. And that's a lot of fun. So getting outside really with anything, that disc golf, whatever, those are good practices.
Just maybe in short or in general, just enjoying the good things of God together, seeking to love what the other loves, seeking to know the other. So as a husband, you're always, and again, the goal is not to come away with a series of, you know, I learned new facts today, but it's also in some ways not less than that, right? You're seeking to grow in your understanding of your wife so that you can counsel her, so you can protect her, you can cherish her, you can love her and shower blessings upon her. And you can't know how to bless her unless you know her. And so that's the idea.
You know, I think one thing that I'm gathering from this is just that this needs to be planned. And so we have to take time to actually plan it and think about it ahead of time, which is just a constant thing that we need to remember as husbands in particular. And so it makes me think, okay, let's plan some dates. Let's think about it, you and I. Not right now necessarily, but let's take some time to plan. I do want to ask a question though. I'll give you some time to think about it. Maybe I'll go first to give you time to think about it. But I want you to think about something that you could maybe plan as a date that you haven't done before, or that you've been wanting to do for a while, but you guys haven't tried yet. And if you have one, let me know. So for me, when we were dating, this was skydiving. I always wanted to get Megan to go skydiving, and she never wanted to go. And I actually looked into it, and it was
because she's a sane human being.
It takes some kind of crazy person to jump out of a perfectly good airplane, right?
That's what I've said so many times.
So we never did that. And now that I'm married, I don't want to do it anymore. I have no desire. It wasn't like a thrill seeking thing, because I thought, well, this is very safe. And, you know, in general, in terms of these sorts of things that you can do, like it would be much more dangerous in some sense for me to try to ride a motorcycle probably, because I've never done it before and I'll just fall over and die probably. But no, it's, I mean, you're with, like, you can't jump alone. You've got to go with somebody who's done it like 1,000 times. But there's just that little piece of me that thinks this is, as a husband and now especially as a father, like this is woefully irresponsible and totally foolish. And there's no amount of desire and enjoyment from the experience that would outweigh that. So that's not one that I have anymore. It was one when we were dating though. But one thing that I would love to do more, that we did a little bit when we were dating but haven't gotten the chance to do, is to go to museums together and to leave the kids with grandparents or something and just go out to a museum for 2-3 hours. And so that's kind of hard because it's got to be in the day and you've got to find somebody to watch kids during the day, but manageable, again, if you can plan it. And one of the reasons is because I've invited Megan into a lot of things. Like we've done some sporty things together. She's learned to play these games and things like that. But she actually studied art in school and can tell me quite a bit about it. And it was always fun to go to museums with her because she knows so much. And so that's just been something that I've delighted in the past, but we haven't done in a long time. So maybe I'll start putting my mind to how we can get to a museum, maybe in Nashville, and do that soon.
That's a great idea. Although in my experience, for Kelsey and I, museums are not great dates, because I tend to geek out and ignore her, and that makes her sad. And so that is I think it'd be a great date, but So I think for me, what I had something that we haven't done hardly at all, but that I'd love to do more, and that I think Kels would too, I just go hiking. We've got fantastic hiking options around here, and it doesn't take long, and you're out in the fresh air, and you're experiencing the good things of God together. So I think that's maybe one that I try. Kelsey, if you're listening, forget I said that.
No, don't forget. keep reminding him to plan the hiking trip. That's good.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons that I wanted to talk about it out loud, is so that we have some accountability with our wives to do this. Yeah, because the hard thing, and you know this, we've alluded to it already, but the hardest thing in the world is to not just sacrifice the time to go on the date itself, but to actually take the time to just think through logistically, how is this going to work? Like, who am I going to call? Who can we find who can watch the kids? Do we need to pay them or not? Like, depending on that relationship and what's going on there, how long it is, what time of day it is, what are we actually going to do? What's going to be fun for her? Those sorts of things. Again, we just have to be willing to do that for our wives and to provide that time. And it's something that we'll get into next week, I think, as we talk about kind of the regroupings and the gathering and discussing how things are going in the household and between the two of you with the kids, getting updates from your wife, that sort of thing. Because oftentimes some of that at least will come up on a date. And I think that's fine. You know, there's the whole meme that predates even the internet, that like when parents go out and they have a nice dinner on a date, they just talk about the kids the whole time, as though they're, you know, nothing's changed. But that's true. And it's true in a unique way and in a good way that's beneficial. And you get to not just kind of diagnose what's going on and are there things to do better or why did this person do that or whatever, but also to just kind of delight in your children together and revel in some of the good times that God has given you recently. And that's always sweet. So maybe don't balk at that too much if you fall into that pattern with your wives out there. You just keep talking about the kids. That's a good thing to do. And it's good to enjoy them in that way together. And it's fun. But you always catch yourself doing it, or at least we always do. We kind of chuckle and think, oh, we've been talking about the kids for 20 minutes here.
We're doing that thing. Yeah. Maybe one parting shot from me, and that is a similarity between dating after marriage and before, is that when before you're married, it's the guy's job to be creative and take initiative and to craft a date, to craft an experience that will be enjoyable to all concerned. And we kind of forget that, at least I did. I tend to forget that when we're married, and it's more like, yes, I wave my hand and say, yes, sweetheart, let's go out on Friday. Will you find a sitter? Right. And that's just lame. But just like it didn't really matter what you did, what you actually did before, on dates before you were married. It just mattered that you'd thought about it and that you'd made a plan, and it might've been a stupid plan. And those are always hilarious, but sometimes it wasn't, and it was awesome. And some of your ideas worked. But that spirit of daring and initiative and creativity and surprise that was so important before you were married is still important and is still to be cultivated. And so I'm saying that to myself. But also in my experience, our wives love that. And they love it when we take initiative and are extremely receptive. So if you're worried, like, no, all my ideas are stupid, well, give one a go. She probably won't think it's stupid.
That's such an important thing to keep in mind, and something that I'm not good at either, but that I know is true because Megan has told me, like, what I think probably it's not overstating it to say the most important thing about a date is that idea of taking initiative and doing it, like crafting this experience for her, whether that experience is this amazing once in a lifetime opportunity or a kind of mundane breakfast on a Tuesday. And either way, if you've taken the time to plan it, to put the logistics in place and to say, hey, this is what we're doing, and you're coming along for the ride, right? And just saying, hey, this is it. This is what we're, I've decided that we're going on this date doing this thing, yada, yada, yada. That gives her not just the sense that, okay, I don't have to make a decision, which is nice, that she doesn't have to decide one more thing as she's made all these decisions all day with the kids. But it also helps her to see, oh, Like you've taken some time to think about this, and maybe it's a half-baked idea and I can't tell yet, and we'll see if it is or not, but I'll go through a half-baked idea with you because I love you and I want to be with you. And it'll be a sweet experience regardless. Yeah, it's such a good thing to keep in mind, and maybe the hardest thing to practice. So yeah, speaking to ourselves again, so important. Well, we're coming up on time here, so I'll throw it back to you. What book do you have as your book recommendation for this week?
Well, considering the topic of the day was marriage and dates, I am recommending a math book because that seemed appropriate. So this is Things to Make and Do in the Fourth Dimension by Matt Parker, which is an utterly delightful book on every level. Maybe every level, I don't know. This is Matt Parker's stand-up comedian mathematician, who's got a great YouTube channel too, which is very fun. But he's the one who introduced me to the idea of recreational mathematics, that math, that the essence of math is play, and that pretty much everything that we have just about in this technological age is downstream of some mathematician somewhere trying to solve a puzzle. That it's games, it's delight, and it's joy. So Things to Make and Do in the Fourth Dimension. Extremely accessible if you're not a mathy type but are interested. I've got it lent out to a friend right now who's in that camp. So great book. Has nothing to do with marriage, but well, maybe it could if I thought hard enough.
I could tie mine into marriage a little bit, but let's see how it goes. Mine is Nicomachean Ethics by Aristotle, and
basically the same book.
Yeah, well, I'll say it is, because in Nicomachean Ethics, he essentially makes the case that to become virtuous, you have to practice virtue. You have to do virtuous things again and again and again, and that's how you gain virtue. So to be good at marriage and to be good at dating, you just have to go on dates. You practice them again and again and again. And we kind of talked about that. So there you go, Nicomachean Ethics. It's been said that all of Western philosophy for the last 2,200 years or so is merely people footnoting Plato and Aristotle. And so if you want an entrance into one of the greatest minds of the Western world and the Western tradition, one of the minds who has most shaped the world that you live in, whether you realize it or not, then yeah, pick up Nicomachean Ethics by Aristotle. He's got great stuff on friendship, on various vices and virtues and how to practice them and identify your own kind of wicked motives. Even as an unbeliever, he had really good insight into the human heart and why we do the things that we do and why it's a problem to do things from wicked motives. But then also the need for acting justly, for acting in the best interest of others and of the community. And so, yeah, a challenging read, an incredibly influential read. I don't know if you could possibly overstate how influential Aristotle's work has been on the Western world. But a great one. And you'll have to wait until later, I guess, to get a recommendation from Plato. I don't think we've done a book from Plato yet, but we will eventually, I'm sure. And then you'll have the two Western philosophers, really.
Some would say, I have a prof who would say that the one I took his Nicomachean Ethics course would say that to recommend Aristotle is to recommend Plato, because Aristotle got all of his best ideas from Plato. But there you are. You look up the work of David Talcott if you want to know more.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining us. We hope you've enjoyed the show. If you'd like to follow what we're writing about, you can see a link to our Substack in the description below. We also want to say thank you to Shane Caver for the use of our theme music.
Thanks, Shane.
And you can see a link to his music in the description below as well. And with that, we hope you've been blessed and edified by the show.
Don't be hasty.
Do you want to transition to book recommendation?
Oh, golly, I forgot we're doing book recommendations. Oh, sorry. yeah. Sorry, one second. What did I even say today? Good. Okay.